Oh, hold on, I got the background all messed up. Excuse me. Anyway, you are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Ray Jeezy and myself, Wole, and we are part of Amppire Media. That's amppiremedia.com. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene.
And if you are watching us on YouTube, please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. And of course, just everybody, no matter where you're watching this or where you're streaming from, subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene on X. I got to get used to saying that still. I'm still kind of struggling with that one. Also, hit us up on IG and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene.
And also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. We'll see what Normie say this, but he ain't in the building. So let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We'll profile NFL Pro Bowl safety, Super Bowl champion, and HBCU and Howard alum Antoine Bethea. Then at 8:25, we'll talk about the Washington Commanders getting dominated by the Buffalo Bills 37-3 and their upcoming game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Then at 8:45, we'll talk about the Orioles possibly clinching the AL East this week with host of Ornithologically Correct, Josh Lynn. I said it. Thank you, Jesus. Finally, at 9:05, we'll preview Saturday night's Charlo Canelo fight with Bite Down Boxing's Reginald Woodson.
Absolutely, bro. Well, let's introduce our guest, who is an alum of the real HU, Howard University. He's also a 14-year NFL veteran, Super Bowl champion, author, motivational speaker, and a current play-by-play man for HBCU Gold on those football games. Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, Antoine Bethea. What's going on, my man?
Man, chilling, man. How y'all doing, man? Thanks for having me, first and foremost.
Oh, no doubt.
Damn, hey, thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
Great to have you. I love the setup. I see the jerseys in the background, but, you know, but before we go there, bro, I want to get started with a question about your playing days at Howard, because we had a former Howard football alum on this show as well, and he talked about his recruitment process. And he said when he came to visit Howard, he was dropped off at the quad. He said that was a freshman girls dorm. He went on to have an all-MEAC stellar career. So what was your recruitment process like, and how did you ultimately land at Howard University?
Man, my recruitment story was a little crazy. I wasn't really highly recruited coming out of high school in Newport News, Virginia. But at the time, Coach Ray Petty, he was a defensive coordinator at Norfolk State, and he was recruiting me. And he ended up getting a job at Howard. And, in that transition of going from Norfolk State to Howard, he stopped at my high school, and he hired my head coach as the offensive coordinator, A.C. Cawthorn. At the time, Cawthorn was like, yo, I think he can play at the next level. At the time when Petty got the job, he didn't have a lot of scholarships. So he was like, look, come on a visit to Howard University, man. This was like in the spring. The weather was good. Pull up on Howard campus. The first spot was the yard. And, the rest was history, man. We was on the yard, man. That Friday night, it was a Louisiana and Texas party called a latex party, man. That joint was off the chain. And,
you can cuss a little bit. Don't worry about it. You can cuss a little bit. Hey, okay. All right, don't worry about it.
Saturday, man, it was a basketball game against Norfolk State, man. And then that night we went to the Ritz.
Oh, the Ritz. Oh, wow, you're bringing it back now.
Ritz, Saturday night. Sunday, man, I made that call to Mom Dukes. It's where I'm gonna be at for next year. Like, regardless of how much money they got, man, we gotta figure something out, man.
Man, that's dope. So we want to add on to that. Can you share any of your homecoming experiences? Now I know he says you can curse, but we want to keep it as clean as possible. But describe what HU homecoming was like for some of our listeners who haven't experienced the real HBCU homecoming out there.
Man, it's I would say my freshman year, man, I was taken back, just with how many people was on the yard. And, they would, the upperclassmen would say, like, you really don't know who you will see that weekend on the yard or on Georgia Ave, man. And it was just like the whole week was just something different, starting with the, you had the comedy show, You had the fashion show, the step show, then, you know, the Yard Fest on Friday. You know, at that time, you know, they was bringing, you know, all type of artists on the yard. And then obviously, you know, Saturday, the game with the band and, you know, just the crowd. But then after the game, just walking down Georgia Ave, just seeing a bunch of people. So, again, when you talk about like a family reunion, that's what it seemed like. Just a big family reunion. Everybody just having a good time. And, you know, just 4 years of that, man. And, you know, it's something that you really just got to experience. You know, you can talk about it, you can describe it. But if you just got to experience the Howard homecoming.
Did your friends ever visit?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like, you know, a lot of my guys from home, they were like, man, we got an honorary degree, man. How much they was up there. But nah, man, it was good times, man. Good times. I tell everybody that was the best 4 years of my life by far.
Wow.
So like, we're like some of the folks you grew up with, you know, being from Newport, the Newport area, with some of the folks you grew up with, were they mad that you chose Howard and then compared to a Norfolk State?
Nah, not at all. Not at all, man. They, you know, folks was happy for me being able to get away from home. It was all love.
All right, so while at Howard, what was your most memorable game and which player was your toughest matchup?
I would say I probably have, well, I would say my most memorable game was like my sophomore year. It was my first official start, the second game of the season against Hampton University. Mm-hmm. And that was probably my best game. I had 3 fumble recoveries. I had a touchdown. Mm-hmm. I had 12 tackles. And that was my first official start. So I would say that was the most memorable game I had at Howard. And then I would say as far as player-wise, it was a few, man. Like, you know, coming through the MEAC, man, they had some dogs, yeah, man. I would say one was Bradshaw Littlejohn, quarterback for Morgan State. Uh-huh. He was a dog. I would probably say that was the one. That was the one. And then, you know, Bethune-Cookman, they had a bunch of athletes. Alan Suber, Eric Weems, he went on to play in the league for a few years. So, but you know, at that time, the MEAC, man, had some dogs and some players that could get it going.
All right. So you said it was the best 4 years of your life, but is there any part of you that wishes that you were playing right now where HBCUs are just having such a resurgence?
Nah, man, I appreciate the time when I was in school. it was just a little different. I appreciate the time, but I do appreciate what the HBCU scene is going to now, though. You know, just with, you know, even before Coach Prime, man, it was talked about. But you know what he was able to do at Jackson State. But I think, you know, we're heading in the right direction.
Oh, definitely, absolutely. We already got some comments. Yard Talk HBCU says salute to legend. Talking about you, of course, not one of us. They talking to you, Antoine. And we appreciate you. You got any comments? You got any questions for Mr. Antoine? But there, please definitely hit us up. Post your comments, post your questions on whatever platform you're watching us currently. And I just wanted to jump into a little bit more of a discussion about Howard, and then we can, of course, go into your playing career. And that's Coach Larry Scott, who right now many feel like he's doing an amazing job in terms of just rebuilding the Howard football program. A lot of people are excited. You know, he had an offer to go coach with Coach Saban at Alabama, but he turned it down to continue to build the program at Howard. And so far this season, they've been competitive. They're looking strong. Just what's your thoughts on how Coach Scott is doing in his job at Howard as head coach?
Man, you said it. I think he's doing a great job, you know, just with obviously coming in and then, you know, running to COVID, really not having those full seasons as far as spring ball to get his guys acclimated. And, you know, just with the culture, you know, the culture that he's bringing, that he's brought to Howard campus, man, I think it's a beautiful thing. You talk about this year and how they've been playing. They're 1-2 right now. Both of those games, they should have won. They went to Eastern Michigan, should have won that game. They punished Morehouse, and then the Hampton game, you know, kind of fell apart at the end of it. But going into a conference play, man, I think, you know, Howard, they have a strong chance to win the MEAC all out this year. So again, man, Coach Scott, man, you know, I can't speak of the job that he's done, and you mentioned as far as being offered that job and saying no, because you know he went out and recruited those young guys, sat in their living room and told their parents, you know, what they were where they were sending their son off to, that he was going to build them into young men, so not to leave them up and dry. And I know that had to be a tough decision, but I commend him for that.
You have a question from Yard Talk as well. She says, ask him about the camp he did this summer.
Which camp?
Yard Talk, what camp are you talking about?
Yeah, which camp?
Yeah.
You must have did multiple camps, I'm assuming.
Nah, I'm trying to think. Because I was doing some coaching and stuff. Okay. I didn't do a camp. I'm trying to think which camp they talking about.
Well, yeah, Yard Talk. If you get a chance, to just put it in the comments.
Let us know.
Oh, okay. It was in Atlanta. What? She said it was in Atlanta.
It might have just been something that I was out there for. I don't think it was a camp, though.
Okay.
It's all good. So moving on, though, you played 14 seasons in the NFL, and that's amazing. The average NFL career span is about 3 years, and you saw a lot during that time. Of course, you went to a Super Bowl. You won a Super Bowl your rookie season. So do you feel as though individuals or players from HBCUs get a fair opportunity? And what's your thoughts about this whole HBCU combine? Some people don't like it. We had a coach tell us he wasn't really feeling it. He feels like players should just be at the regular combine. So what's your thoughts on just HBCUs and opportunity? And is the saying true that if you can ball, they can find you?
So I do not think, you know, HBCU players get the same opportunity. I feel like it is tougher for guys coming from HBCUs. I think, you know, it has been guys. Just what I'll say. I don't think enough guys get those opportunities. And the reason why I say that is because, and I say this all the time, is when scouts goes into a HBCU office or coach's office at an HBCU, that player has to be undoubtedly one of the best players, right? Versus you go to University of Michigan or Ohio State, player could be subpar, but because they're at that university, they're going to get a shot. And I'm not even saying getting drafted, but even getting into camp, they're going to get a shot because of the emblem on their helmet, right? So I say all the time, when scouts go to these HBCUs, they're afraid to go back to their boss or a Bill Belichick or owner and say, hey, this guy right here from this HBCU, I'm going to stand on the table for, because they know their job is on the line. So again, it's like the people that are scouting, they got to know what they're looking for, because you can't tell me that it's not guys that's at this level that's not draft worthy. We should have way more guys getting drafted from HBCUs. And I said it when I got drafted and I went into camp. And I was looking at some of these guys from these Power Fives. I'm like, these guys are trash. Now, granted, a lot of them are good, but some of them are trash. And I'm like, yo, this guys at Howard right now that I know can come in and do a better job than what these guys are doing. But just having that emblem on the side of the helmet, and that's not hate. That's just me being honest. You know what I'm saying? But again, I feel as though. When we do get our shot, when we do get our opportunity, and you can look at it, like when those guys from HBCUs get a shot in camp, they make a name for themselves. So again, I just hope at some point, you know, it can, it'll be more of us. And as far as the combine, you know, I'm not sure. I haven't seen the combine. You know what I mean? So I can't really speak on something that I haven't seen. Obviously, the more eyes you can put on the guys, I think is good. So if you do have that combine, and you do have scouts from 32 teams to come look at those guys, I feel like that's an opportunity. So let's not throw those opportunities away. You know what I mean? Granted, you can go to the big combine in Indianapolis. That's what you want. But the more eyes you can get on the guys, man, at the end of the day, that's what you want to see.
Mm. So, I mean, you spoke about like your experience, but what were some of your challenges and ignorant stigmas that you had to overcome coming from, I mean, your rookie year coming from an HBCU?
I mean, the first thing is that, you know, the competition, the level of competition that you play is not to par, you know what I mean? So that was the biggest thing. And then I feel like when they come in the building, they're not coming to see what you're doing good. They're coming to see what you lack. So, you know, not all scouts, but some scouts were just saying you're too small, too slow. Again, the competition level of play isn't there. So, again, you know, you just have to be that much better when they turn the film on at a smaller school, at a HBCU.
So, I mean, and jumping on that, and speaking of that, you know, you play for the Colts, and they have a top-level defensive player who also went to HBCU in Shaq Leonard. He went to South Carolina State. Have you ever chopped it up with them, share stories with them, knowing that you both were in that organization and also pro bowlers with the Colts coming from an HBCU?
Yeah, man. It's a funny story where he's from. That's where my mom and dad is from, small town of South Carolina. So at the time I was coming out, he had an older brother playing at Clemson. So, you know, went to his camp. And at that time, Darius was younger, real young. So we've talked. Obviously, you know, when you bump into – that was one of the things that I always did when I was playing. I would look on the roster and see who came from an HBCU because it's always love. Uh-huh. So I've chopped it up with them. Indianapolis, they also have another a D lineman by Grover Stewart, you know, with the Albany State. He's HBCU grad as well, man. So Indy, they've always done a good job as far as, you know, going out and looking for those diamonds in the roughs type guys coming from HBCUs.
So speaking of your time in Indy, any who took you under their wing when you got to Indy?
Man, my guy Robert Mathis, another HBCU alum. I'll say my guy Gary Brackett, Cato June.
DC.
Yeah. Okay. Yep, Cato June. And then my guys, you know, Kelvin Hayden and Marlon Jackson. Like, those are kind of my guys that – you know, took me under their wing, man, and we created that bond.
And your experience winning that Super Bowl, like, how was that for you? You know, just, you know, being a guy who pretty much came from, like, in terms of made his name in the league, you know what I mean? Like, not like you said, not having the Power Five, you know, college or whatever, but earning your spot on the team, be able to be on the field, being a playmaker on the field. Your experience in that Super Bowl, how was it?
Man, it was everything, man. You know, when you play the sport, you know, regardless of whatever that sport is, you want to get to the top of the mountain. And the Super Bowl, that's what it is. So for me, just a year prior at Howard University, you know, coming in my rookie year and starting, you know, the entire season and just playing in the Super Bowl my first year, man, it was a blessing. And then to win it, you know, I'm walking out of there. It's like, yo, okay, I'm gonna get a couple of these things. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is easy. But it was a great experience. You know, a great experience. You know, it's one of those things that some of the all time greats can't say that they got a Super Bowl ring or even that much play in a Super Bowl. So for me to do that my first year, man, it was amazing.
And also being a 3-time Pro Bowler. Like, that's just a compliment to your hard work. Talk about that, like, being acknowledged by your peers and like in the NFL to be a Pro Bowler 3 times. Like, again, like you just said, you came from Howard. You had folks on that same team that you felt could be in the league, but you got to represent the brand of Howard in the NFL, 3-time Pro Bowler. Like, talk about that, man. Talk about that experience and how proud you were of yourself, to be honest with you.
Yeah, man, you said it. You know, being acknowledged by your peers, by the coaches, by the fans. That's big. And I always went out to play, like, first and foremost for the name on the back of my jersey. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it was, okay, I'm going to do this for the Mecca. I'm going to do this for all HBCUs. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing this for my hometown. Mm-hmm. So again, that was something that I always wanted to do when I stepped foot on the field. But when you talk about Pro Bowlers, it's like, okay, like, you got, you know, your Pro Bowlers, you got your All-Pro, and, you know, obviously you have your team goals, but then you have your individual goals. And that's some of the individual goals that you had, want to be acknowledged as one of the best in the league. And, again, man, just coming from Newport News and going to Howard, you know, those are like dreams that you imagine, and for those dreams to come true, something that always stick with me.
All right, now Wole, I know you want to ask him about Peyton Manning. Of course, Peyton Manning is one of the GOATs. Before we do that, though, bro, I want to tell you something that you said before that kind of stuck with me. You said before you build the brand, you have to build the man, right? And that stuck with me because, you know, me and my man Wole, we doing this show. We credentialed members of the media, just out here in the journalism field. But we was playing Madden in a class one time. We was in school, man, at Maryland Eastern Shore, and we never thought we would be doing this. So we trying to build our brand, but we also working on ourselves, and the HBCU experience is a big part of that. Just talk about that statement that you made, and talk about how, you know, you inspire others in terms of building themselves up as they try to grow in whatever profession that they're in.
Yeah, man. And I mean, that's just life, right? So before you try to build anything, like, you got to make sure you're right within, and not saying that you got to be perfect, but you just got to be moving in the right way and moving in the right direction. That's just like, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. I know it's cliche, but that's real. And then just, again, just looking yourself in the mirror and just like, you know, like, am I going in the right direction? Am I where I want to be? So before you can just, you know, build a brand, because when people buy into a brand, like, they're buying into you. And at the end of the day, nobody wants to put their money into no BS. You feel what I'm saying? So again, when you talking about that, and that was my whole thing, where, you know, when I was speaking, people would talk, they were asking me about the NIL, and, you know, we looking at the, you know, name, image, and likeness. People just talking about, I just want to get the money. But now, sometimes you just don't want to associate yourself with a brand just because they're going to pay bread.
True.
You just, you know, all money ain't good money. You know what I'm saying?
True.
But again, with that building a man before you build a brand, it's just really about just looking yourself in the mirror and just like, yo, am I going in the right direction? Am I who I really want to be? You know what I mean? And don't front. You know what I'm saying? You can't front. You know what I'm saying? You got to keep it real with yourself. Like, am I really who I want to be? Am I at least going in that right direction? Because we all gonna have our pitfalls. We all gonna fall short sometimes, but it's just, you know, having the right thought process as you navigate through this thing called life.
Real talk. Ray, I'm mad you mentioned the Madden in the classroom thing. You ain't had to do that, though.
Hey, listen, bro. It's a reflection of the growth of just the two of us, bro. It was a positive statement, brother.
So Ray is right. I wanted to mention Peyton Manning. What is, like, obviously, outside of football, we've seen Peyton Manning's sense of humor. So for you, like, what is your wildest Peyton Manning story? Because initially, I wouldn't think this dude is funny, but outside of football, this dude is hilarious.
Nah, man. You know, inside the building, man, it was like, nah, I'm not gonna say all business, but 95% of the time it was like, yo, like, we coming here to work, man. We coming here to be the greatest. And that's the thing that I kind of took away from it, and what I respected the most, it was just his accountability, like, and how he held everybody around him accountable, not just coaches, not just players, but coaches too. Like, you know, coaches can be wrong, and coaches, you can get called out too. So it was just like the strive for perfection. But then, you know, when we was able to, you know, let our hair down, man, it was all jokes. It was all love. It was all family. Mm-hmm. I think that was the reason why the team was so good, because we, you know, we respected one another, and we actually liked one another. You know what I'm saying? Regardless if it was on the defensive side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball, guys really rocked with each other. We supported each other, man. And, you know, it was jokes and clowning for days. You know what I'm saying? So, like, what you see Saturday Night Live and what you see in the commercials, man, you know, that's boys being boys.
Awesome. Well, I mean, this has been great. Is there anything you would like to add? Feel free to plug anything. I see you have a podcast. Plug your podcast. Plug anything you want to plug right here, man.
You know, I got my podcast. I got my co-host, Darius Butler, a former teammate of mine. It's called the Man to Man Podcast. We live Mondays and Thursdays, 8 a.m. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can catch us there. And, you know, yeah, definitely, you know, if you're into HBCU football, man, I'm a color analyst for HBCU Go. If you got the Grio, we be live on Saturdays, SWAC games, CIAA games, and SIAC, man. So that's definitely a good look. But other than that, man, just want to tell y'all, man, keep doing y'all thing, man. Take it one day at a time, man, and sooner or later, man, y'all going to blow.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you. Who the best team to SWAC? And who the best team in SWAC? Me and Ray, we already know Essential is probably the best team right now.
No,
I'm saying SWAC first. I said who the best team in SWAC after we already know.
I might go with Fam right now in the SWAC.
Say Fam? Oh. All right. Okay.
I might say Fam right now.
Because they beat Jackson State? Yeah. The way they beat them?
Yeah, I would say Fam right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. But and Central in the MEAC, right? You would say Central right now in the MEAC.
Yeah, I'm going to say Howard.
You want to say Howard?
Okay.
I tried to catch him. Hey, Ray, I tried to get him, though.
I'm going with home team.
Hey, man. We went to University of Maryland Eastern Show. We don't got football
team. We can't be in this race.
We can't be.
Something got to give with that, man. Y'all need a football team.
I know, man. We've been trying.
Part of my mission. That's part of why I'm doing this, bro, to be real, man. To give back to my school, and hopefully we can see that reality become real.
Yeah.
Very soon, man. But thanks again for joining us, brother.
We appreciate it.
Great.
Nah, man, no doubt, man. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Oh, it's awesome, man.
100. All right. And I know Y'all Talk not listening no more, bro, but Y'all Talk created a whole firestorm on Twitter over the weekend, Slim. I'm trying to tell you, like, it was real. I meant to say something, but you know, we couldn't really mention it while we had him on the show.
I know that's right, but that was dope, man. Hey, man, we talked about Howard football, but unfortunately, let's talk about the main football team in the DMV. Geez, Louise. Hey, Sunday, the Commanders got mollywhopped by the Buffalo Bills, 37-3. See my language, right? It's awesome. For their first loss of the season, what were your overall thoughts of the game? You weren't on our, you know, Auburn and goal or anything post game, but I want to get your thoughts.
You know, I share my thoughts in the comment section, if you remember. Some of it I can still go back to now because this is my first time getting to talk about it on this platform. Yeah. And first and foremost, I feel like Sam Howell, on that first hit he took, I don't think he recovered from it. I don't know if he was necessarily concussed, but I feel like he definitely got his bell rung. And I think that made all the world of a difference moving forward in that game. Not to say that his offensive line blocking was great, but still, when you got hit like that, it makes you think twice about whether you want to run. You then start to second guess yourself. You hold the football too long, and he's still a young quarterback, so that impacted him. But overall, so I'm not redundant, the Cowboys lost. Yeah. You know who the Giants are. So if you ask me, the Commanders are not in a bad spot, even though you lost by a blowout or you were blown out. Mm-hmm. A loss is a loss. So you got to move forward. Now you got a divisional game this week, and you got to turn the page. But I feel as though the defense played well enough for you to be in the ball game. And I feel like Eric Bieniemy does need to implement the run a bit more in his offense. However, the criticism that came his way. Now, everybody, of course, thought he was the best thing since sliced bread after Carter, right?
Yeah, it's
like, well, he's not too much.
And Sam and Howe too. Both of them are getting like.
Yeah, it's like, hold on.
It's crazy.
Okay,
it's crazy.
About one game in a sense where just a week ago, it was all good. And I know that Miami did destroy. They did destroy Denver.
But still,
and I think I might say the Cardinals game. My bad. I meant the Denver game. But regardless, Denver, I feel as though was a pretty good measuring stick on the road for a young Sam Howell. So I feel like that was legit. And everybody thought, okay, we've turned a page from Scott Turner to Eric Bieniemy. But as soon as you lose, and it was the defense of Buffalo that really made the game difficult for Sam.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden we're regressing. Nah. I think just like a year ago where Washington went up to Philly and was competitive, I know we'll get there. I think you'll have a similar matchup this season. But overall, my thought to the game was it's not time to panic. Buffalo's defense played really, really well. And I told y'all also in the post game that you can't sell your tickets and have Buffalo like 50-50 in your home stadium. I'm sorry. Buffalo.
Yeah, but they mob it, though. They mob a lot of stadiums. I know you're right, but they mob a lot of stadiums, though. You watched the Arizona game, the Arizona Cowboys game?
Well, that's always the case for the Cowboys, though.
Yeah, so Washington ain't there yet. To your point, though, you don't want that. They're not there yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've had a history of – a recent history of having the opposing team mob their stadium. You know what I'm saying? So that's not going to be changed in a day, bro, or in a week or in whatever. If you got a good fan base, you're still able to kind of infiltrate this stadium, in my opinion. Like – you're going to get the same thing with the Cowboys. I think you're probably going to get the same thing with the Cowboys. Let me not lie. The Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles, you're going to get similar to that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a realist when it comes to it. But for me, My disappointment in that game and my thought process is, again, you put a lot of equity. You're right. Defense didn't play horrible, but you did put a lot of equity in that defense. And I just don't like, just like you don't like, you talk about, you don't like Rivera and his, like, his temperament at times, right? I don't like playing defense to just be a good defense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like that. Like, I feel like, when Antoine was talking about, like, build your brand, build your core, like, build your brand, be the best, basically. You know what I'm saying? Well, play, like, you put all the equity on defense. How about playing defense like you want to be the best defense in the NFL rather than just being a top 10 defense? You know what I mean? What that means is that, all right, we're not going to have people just running wide open. You know, like Stephon Diggs, you knew the game plan. You knew who Josh Allen was going to look for. You knew this is a homecoming game for dude, for Stephon Diggs. Like, you knew this. I'm not saying you're supposed to stop Stephon Diggs because he's that dude, but he shouldn't be running wide by himself at times. He shouldn't be running by himself. Like, there should be somebody following Stephon Diggs, period. I don't care if the dude gets beat, but somebody has to follow him. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have a play where Stephon Diggs is on one side, that I think there was a tight end on the other side, and I think it may have been the third wide receiver on the same side. Stephon Diggs breaks out. They follow the other two, but they leave Stephon Diggs wide open. No, you don't. That's obvious. I don't care if you blow coverage and let the other dude wide. Like, you can't leave Stephon Diggs wide open, you know, at all. Because he's Stephon Diggs. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's my thing. Like, coach defense to be great. Like, or play defense to be great. You know what I'm saying? But don't play defense just to be a top 10 defense. Especially when you have the dogs on the field to be better than just top 10. You can top three. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you're right. Like, they gave up 16 points for most of the game with all the turnovers. They gave up 16 mm-hmm. points in the fourth quarter. They were down 16-0. So, yes, that's not bad. But also, when you're a dominant defense, you're not allowing a team going 9-for-15 on third down, a lot of them third and long. 9-for-15 on third down plays is not good. And a lot of them are third and long. So you can't get a stop at all? That's not good. You know what I mean? So to me, like, yes, we can go on Sam Howell. We can go on EB. I mean, Sam Howell is a rookie, so it's like, but I think people are too hard on Sam Howell because he's a rookie. Like, he's basically a rookie going against the Buffalo defense. But, and to your point, Ray, everybody was getting the flowers, and now he's the worst thing in the world. And some people are talking about Jacoby Brissett, which is weird. But you got a defense that has been here, who you put equity in, who's supposed to be leading your team. You need to dominate. I'm done with, like, for me, I'm done with the whole process of, okay, yeah, the offense put them, you know, they kind of set them up. They did set them up. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. But it gets to a point where you want to see this defense dominate. Like, I need to see this defense dominate. They've been good, but I want to see you dominate for four quarters.
Yeah, you talk about that a lot, not being – a bend but don't break defense, but a great defense, not a good defense. Because
Breland said that. Because Breland said that to us. He said that's what this defense. We looking at his defense. Breland's like, they're good, but he said, yeah, but they're bend but don't break defense. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. So you made a change on the offensive side. Then that the key may be having to make a change on that side of the ball as well. Because JDR, of course, has had his time. He's had his opportunities. So this is it. And mm-hmm. this season, if you don't get it right, then change is going to come. But you're right about the talent. Everybody knows that. The front four is well respected around the league. Yeah. But in terms of making sure that you secure sacks and winning turnover battles, we talked about that at the Denver game. You win a turnover battle, you can win football games, and that happened in Denver. So now you want to have that be a consistent occurrence for your defense. But 2-1 looks good. And it don't matter if you lost 37-34 or in a game with a field goal, you got blown out. It's 2-1, and you got to move forward.
So do you think that this loss kind of hinders this team's progress, or do you feel like it don't really matter? Just a loss is a loss to you.
No, I think it should aid this team's progress. We talk about mm-hmm. who EB has become to this team, the type of leader that he is. I feel as though it's not a fun week for these guys right now because of the performance, the offense. Of course, like you said, was largely blamed for the defeat and for the nature in which the defeat occurred. So now EB's probably in the ears like, all right, we cannot have a repeat of what happened. He defeated Philly in the Super Bowl. He's going to tell these guys, I know how to beat this team. All right. Do you know how to beat this team? Because now we got to face them, and we got to face a team that we know we're going to have to overcome potentially within the division and or the playoffs. It's time to show what we can do. And Sam, learn from the mistakes you made. Watch plenty of film this week. I think it's an opportunity to learn. I mean, where can you go? That's the worst beating you probably going to get this season. So you can only go up. When you get to like rock bottom, you can only go up. That's the saying, right?
Yeah, you ain't lying, bro. You are not lying. Yeah, I just hope it doesn't hinder Sam Howell. I hope it doesn't hinder him in terms of like, you know, when you have a game, you throw four interceptions, right? It's natural for you to start to second guess yourself. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully he develops amnesia and still goes out there and try to ball. You know what I mean? Because quarterback's going to throw interceptions. Rookie quarterbacks will definitely throw interceptions. That's the thing that's going to happen. But do you learn from it? You know what I'm saying? So hopefully he learns from it, like you said, Ray, and makes him stronger. And makes the offense as a whole learns from it and makes their team stronger. You know what I mean? But, yeah, there's definitely a lesson to be learned from that game because that was one of the biggest ass-whoopings. Dominating ass-whoopings, 37-3. That thing was special, bro. That thing was special. That thing was like, oh, snap. It's getting worse.
Look at what happened to Denver over the weekend. I mentioned that.
I don't think they're overcoming that.
And then on top of that, look at what happened to the Giants week one. You're not, and the Giants turn around win at Arizona. They overcame a big deficit. So you cannot get hung up on a loss like that. Although what's crazy is, and this is why I'm still a little bit miffed about people selling their seats. Is well, they. I watch you. I watch Doug. I watch all these dudes, Rio, all y'all brothers, man. Salute to all y'all. I watch all y'all predictions, and almost everybody, except for one person I can remember, picked the Commanders by a sizable margin. So that means you had faith that this team could get it done. True. And I'm like, dang, that's why, like, Felix on the pregame show said the atmosphere was electric. I'm like, I don't see that. I see Buffalo up in there. So I'm just saying, if you're going to really turn a page, man, folks really need to go full in on this team and this group, and you got to stick with them through the growing pains, bro.
Facts, bro. Facts. All right. Like last year, the Commanders are traveling to Philadelphia to take on an undefeated Eagles team. Nobody has the Commanders winning this game. Actually, I'm in that same little group, and nobody really has the Commanders winning. They got them getting blown out in terms of the picks you're talking about. I'm looking at the chat. Everybody has the Commanders getting blown out. I actually picked the Commanders, but I'm being a homer. I ain't gonna hold you, bro. What do you want to see from the Commanders in Philadelphia?
I want to see the Commanders, like you said, on defense, be dominant.
Yeah.
Get pressure on the quarterback. Don't allow this awesome receiving core and the Philadelphia Eagles begin to gain confidence and get loose, because then it could be a long day if Hurts is escaping the pocket and finding his guys. You got to keep him contained. You got to get to him. If you don't, it's going to be a long day. Additionally, if the Commanders really have the best receiving core in the league, you need to prove it against a group of guys on the other side who believe they're the best receiving core in football. Sure. So this is a game about pride. This is also
good
about
point, bro.
If we win this game, we're number one in our division, in a tough division. I think it's a statement. You on the road. It's a new start. EB beat this defense in the Super Bowl. Now, granted, he had Mahomes. So that's the biggest difference. But still, it's a sticking point. A lot of us talk about Eric Bieniemy's experience and how he's a Super Bowl winning offensive coordinator. Okay, so why can't we approach this matchup and say, you know what? He just defeated this team. He knows the blueprint. Let's get it done. Run that football too, fam.
Yeah, he gonna have to. I mean, this is what I want to see. Something like I think I said this last year, in last year's game. So I'll just use the same model. Compete, just compete, compete at a high level. And I want to see the offense compete, because it's easy to dwell on what happened this last Sunday. It's easy to dwell on it. So, but I want to see your confidence show that you're not scared of. You're not scared to make mistakes. Compete. That's the most important thing. Even like Antonio Gibson, use him as an example. He fumbled the ball. I think in practice they showed, like, Ray, I think you put it out there on our chat, with him, the way he's holding the football. Compete, bro. Like, make a play for your team. Show your teammates that, you know, that ain't going to happen again. And you're willing to do whatever it takes to make a play to redeem yourself from what happened last week. Right. So just compete and make plays. Defense. All right, don't put it all on Sam Howell. Like, say, you know what? We're going to win this game. Like, instead of saying, like, okay, we just going to try to do enough for our offense to kind of take us over. No, we're going to win this game. Put it on yourself. We're going to win this game. If you have that mindset, then you should be able to compete with the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not saying you're going to win the game, to be honest with you. You're the underdogs. You're the big underdogs. That's the truth. That's the fact. But,
man, if you put yourself out there, could be a beast.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. For the Eagles or just in general?
Nah, for Washington, I feel like them going into this game being an underdog, I think that's great for them.
Yeah.
I think they had expectations last week because they were off to a hot start.
Yeah,
they were one of three teams mentioned as surprising 2-0 starts. But this game, just go and play carefree football, just like you did a season ago.
Yeah, play carefree football and just, but play with a level of intensity. Like, just instead of saying like, hey, you know, I'm a trust that this person over here, our offense is gonna take over it. No, if I'm the offense, we're going to win the game. Like, I want to win the game. We want to win the game. If I'm the defense, like, nah, we're going to win the game. It's on us to win the game. Have that ownership in this game. And I feel like if you do that, your outcome, win or loss, you'll be happy with your outcome.
Yeah, I just want to say to the fans, I watch X. I'm getting used to saying it. And at halftime of that Denver game, everybody wanted the coaching staff fired. And I'm going to say even before the second quarter, we are still trash. We're still this. Some things never change. Yeah. Like, this fan base is really, really fragile, man. Y'all gotta hold on. My goodness. I know I get how fans can be, but I'm just saying, I watched. And then to watch the flip, once you come back and win, Sam Howell is this, EB is that. It was amazing to watch the flip. And now we're back to square one where we stuck.
Back.
And we're back.
We got Chase Young haters again and everything, bro. It's real. Like, he had the worst.
It's literally quarter to quarter the temperature of this fan base. And it's terrible, man. I want to shout out one person, man. That's my man, the beard on X.
The beard,
he always like, bro, like, cool. Calm down. Yeah. Like, really? Like, root for your team. Cool. Like, I get it. Anyway, I digress.
No, you real. Let's keep it.
And the Commanders aren't even my team, bro.
No, you keep the buck. That's real talk. You know what I'm saying? Not to be funny. That is real talk, though. Hey, but Ray, finish the statement for me, bro. Washington wins if.
Washington wins if they come out fast and start the game fast. And also, if they win the turnover battle, Washington will win this game.
If you're listening to the show, folks, feel free to respond to the question as well. Finish the statement. Washington wins if. All right, so on Twitter, could be posted this later, in the afternoon, the same question. My man, Commander J. Dilla, Premier Wonder, says Sam's turnovers, because every single one of them were unnecessary and eventually caused the defense to wear down. Also, EB didn't run enough. You can't have your backs getting over 7 yards per carry and abandoning. Mm-hmm. I expect both to be better against Philly. I know my man Cameron had one too. Let me see if I can find him real quick. There you go. Cameron said, pretty much everyone as a whole, both. Well, this is right. Yeah, this is it. Not something else. Actually, that's something else. All right. I'm gonna read a tweet though. I said, what? So this is a tweet that I put out there said, what pissed you off the most about the Commanders' loss to the Buffalo Bills? Cameron said, offensively and defensively. He said, pretty much everyone as a whole, offensively and defensively. So, but yeah, for me, let me read. It's basically the same thing. Washington wins if they play with a dog, bro. I'm sorry, they play with a dog. I know it's like cliche, like, yeah, everybody should play with that type of energy, but you gotta play like you want it, like you really want it. Like that intensity that we saw that primetime game last year when the Eagles were undefeated and watched that was a different type of intensity. Play with that dog. Like, yeah, I can go out and say create turnovers, like create turnovers, win the turnover battle. Like, run the football. I can say that. But the grand scheme of the real thing of it is play with that energy. Play with that desperateness. Like, okay, we got to take this. We got to win it. You do that?
No doubt.
You'll be fine.
That's the one aspect of Ron's tenure I can't stand. They start slow, and they just don't seem to come out with that passion. Come out and hit somebody in the mouth. It's going to have to be Chase. It's going to have to be Defoe. It's going to have to be guys who they got that in them. And I guarantee the rest will follow. We know Terry is the guy on offense, man. He's the leader of offense. And he gets them going. Find that dude early as well. In addition to running the ball, run some play action. EB is good. EB became one-dimensional because of the nature of that football game. And I get it. But this is a new week, baby. We putting Buffalo behind us. I'm still not going to pick the Commander this week, but I think it's going to be close.
Give me a score real quick.
You already know.
Okay,
to be honest, I expect the defense to be better than they were last week. So I'm going to say 23-17 Philly, even though I want to pick the Commanders. I just don't have the heart to do it.
I feel you. Give me I'm picking Washington because I'm a homer. Give me Washington 24-20.
Okay. A last drive
for a win. That's how I'm gonna look. That's how I look at
similar
it.
Similar scores, bro. That's what I'm saying. Up.
Well, the Commanders disappointed. I can say main. The Commanders disappointed me Sunday, but the Orioles have provided me with so much joy, just so much joy. I won't lie to you. So much joy. Right, so let me introduce my next guest. Right now we have host of the I can't even say it, man. I can't go lie to you. I said it right the first time. Ornithologically. Thank you, correct podcast. Josh Lynn on the show. What's up, Josh?
Hey, man. How you guys doing? Bro? Nice good. To talk to you again.
Look, Josh, I said it good initially the first time doing my pregame. This time I just said it horribly.
I'm not helping you out with a name like that. I'm not. Like, I can barely say it right.
I appreciate you, Josh. Thanks for coming on, man. We enjoyed having you on the last time. We really did. So appreciate you having you on. But Josh, before we go into talking about the O's, can you tell our listeners about your podcast?
Sure. It's called Ornithologically Correct. It's hosted by me only. I soft launched it back in April, did a couple of episodes, and I am going to be bringing it back next week to do a comprehensive postseason preview once everybody kind of gets dialed in and I know, you know, who's playing who. So very excited to do that. And previously I wrote for Birds Watcher, which is the Orioles fan-sided affiliate, and Utah Street Report as well. Both very good sites. I encourage you to check them out as well.
And folks, and you're on YouTube too, right? It's on YouTube.
I do post my episodes to YouTube, and they are on every major podcast service. I partner with a Red Sox podcast named the Pesky Podcast. I'm a part of their network, so to speak. So, you need AL East content. You come there.
So you're partnering with a Red Sox. Interesting.
Yeah. So actually, one of the co-hosts I've known since we were 5 years old. He's a diehard Red Sox fan. Always has been. So it's really cool to do with him.
All right. So, the Orioles are in good shape to clinch the AL East this week. They're actually winning 5-1 at the moment. The Rays won. So I think they're going to drop the number down to one. The magic number is one. So how improbable has this season been for you?
I don't want to say entirely because I knew they were going to be good, but I did not see them flirting with 100 wins, to be honest with you. I was actually on the aforementioned Pesky podcast. I said at the beginning of the season, I thought like anywhere from 86 to 89, I thought that they were going to end up in. And I thought that would be a decent improvement from last year when they won 83. Mm-hmm. And you figure, you know, just from the young guys improving and the free agent pickups that they added, that, you know, I thought that would be a comfortable win total for them. And I thought that they would challenge for a wild card spot. The division I did not think was an attainable goal this year. And I'm pretty sure Mike Elias even said that back in, I want to say February. Mm-hmm. So yeah, completely and happily stunned.
Yeah, it's been a great season. I'm like you though. I thought they were going to be a good team. Yeah, right. You know, raising that right. But I thought they were going to be a good team. Obviously, I didn't think they were going to win 100 games, but I thought they would compete. Like, I thought they would be a postseason team. I did feel like they'd be a wild card team. I thought that initially going into the season, but then how the season was playing out, you know, the first couple of months, I felt like, okay, all right, this team is a little different now, you know, especially, you know, the setup, even with seeing Cano and the Cano-Batista combination, I was like, okay, this team could be something real special.
Yeah, and even because the Rays got off to that insane start, they were 20-3 at 1.2, so they were down like double-digit games, and then come to June, and they're slowly but surely closing the gap, and it's just like, holy crap, like they have a legitimate shot at this, and the fact that they've, you know, caught them and passed them, and kept ahead of them is a testament to all of the, you know, managers, coaches, and players. It's a remarkable achievement for a young team like this.
So true. So Saturday, Orioles pitcher John Means, in his longest start since returning from Tommy John surgery, went 7 1/3 innings, allowing one hit and a run against the Cleveland Guardians. How has his emergence changed the outlook of on the Orioles postseason pitching staff?
I don't want to exaggerate or be hyperbolic, but he kind of saved us in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, our pitching staff was looking a little shaky. You had Bradish, who was consistently good throughout. Grayson Rodriguez has been incredible in the second half. But after that, there was a lot of shakiness. Mm-hmm. Kyle Gibson had a really rough stretch in July. Yeah. I think his ERA was close to 8 in July. Yeah,
it was.
Kramer was struggling. Tyler Wells hit his innings limit and kind of fell off of a cliff and had to get sent down to AAA. So to have him come back and especially considering the circumstances that he's coming off of a Tommy John surgery, he's been a godsend for the Orioles. And specifically that start, the bullpen was struggling, in that Cleveland series, because the pitchers just were not going long enough. I think in the second game, Kramer didn't even make it out of the fourth. Yeah. And they were having to pitch 4 or 5 innings every night. So to go into the eighth inning, it was just such a boost for, you know, just on his behalf, just seeing him after this Tommy John come back and pitch that well. But to give the bullpen the rest after playing, I think it was 17 straight games, that was so crucial to, you know, because if the Orioles had been in a wild card position, mm-hmm. and, you know, technically they still can, I think they would have been in some trouble just given what the bullpen situation was like. But that stretch of Gibson, Means, and Grayson going deep into the game I think it was racing against the Rays. It was huge.
So would you say that Means is now probably, I mean, he's definitely in the rotation in the postseason, but where do you put him at? Is he the third pitcher? Because at first I was thinking he could be four because I thought Kramer would be third. So is he now three?
So I wonder how they play it. So if it looks like if the Orioles win the division, they're going to be the one seed in the AL. So they'll have home field throughout, meaning game 1 and 2 will be in Baltimore. So I wonder if they'll use Means for game 2 because Camden Yards is a great, you know, park for him with the left field wall.
Yeah, good point.
So I wonder if they maybe, I think like Bradish is getting game 1. I don't think that's a question.
Definitely.
So, and really beyond that, it's just kind of more playing to matchups anyway. So if I had to guess, I think they would throw Means game 2, Grayson game 3. And then I honestly think they would go Gibson over Kramer if they needed a 4 starter.
Do you really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm scared of Gibson. I won't lie to you.
I think him and Kramer are very similar. They're both prone to giving up homers and having bad starts. I think Hyde will go with Gibson just because of the kind of the stereotypical, he has experience. He's pitched in the playoffs before. Mm-hmm. And he's very clearly got like a leadership role in this team, even though he's only been here for 1 year. So I would put money on Gibson being the 4th starter. So I think Kramer would move to the bullpen.
Okay. So we're talking about the bullpen, and obviously, I mean, recently, even today, starters have been going deeper. So it's getting the bullpen some rest. We saw Bradish yesterday. And Gibson and Means both went deep, like giving the bullpen giving them a break. But obviously, they're missing all-star closer Felix Bautista. He's dealing with a shoulder injury. What are your concerns right now with the bullpen, knowing that it seems like to me it's like 50-50 and maybe lower that Bautista gets to the postseason?
Yeah, I'm less worried than I was like a week ago because the postseason schedule, there's so many off days built in, and then you have the luxury of shortening your rotation. So you have more arms, so we'd have like Flaherty, Kramer, and whoever. So I'm not as concerned. But obviously, you know, having a healthy Felix Bautista would change everything. Yeah. Though I got to give credit to guys who have stepped up in his place. Like Cino Perez has looked like himself again.
Yes.
Since Batista's gone down, Cano has had a couple of shaky appearances, including the one in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But last night he looked
good,
tremendous. Oh my goodness! So it's just that was just such a luxury to have him in a seventh or eighth inning role. But that, yeah, it's going to definitely be tough. But again, I guess, I mean, Felix could still technically pitch. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll talk about that, but I'm not as down on it as some for sure. I think the built-in off days and the shortened rotation will kind of mitigate some of that issue.
So do you think Felix will play? Cause I'm on the side of thinking like, I don't think he's going to play for some strange reason. That's what's in my mind. Like, I don't think he's going to play.
But yeah. I mean,
he's throwing.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like if he wasn't, why, you know, what's the point of going through all this? But then it's just like, I'm worried about him, just the person. Yeah, like, I don't want to see his long-term future get sacrificed. I can't imagine they'd be ramping him up and having him throw a sim game if they weren't confident that, things weren't going to go wrong. And there is like very limited precedent. I know Masahiro Tanaka, who used to pitch for the Yankees, he partially tore his UCL in 2014 and he rehabbed it, came back and pitched 9 years after that without TJ, as far as I'm concerned. So it's theoretically possible, but then we're talking about a guy that throws 102 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So it's tough. And I know the splitter specifically is a pitch that can cause extra stress in your elbow because of having to spread your hand apart at, further than you would for a fastball. And that's his best pitch.
Yeah.
So I'm nervous, but if they are confident that there's no long-term damage beyond Tommy John, I think it's worth a shot, because whether he got it last week or got it a month from now, he's not going to pitch next year. Mm-hmm. So why not take the chance that maybe he can help you now before that happens? I just hope the best for his personal health and just hope that he can rebound from this after all it's said and done. But there's no reason to think that those doctors are being, nefarious or anything like that. So I trust them.
Ray?
I want to jump in finally. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah. Sure. All right.
So I know I'm a Nets fan, but of course I grew up an Orioles fan because we didn't have a baseball team here in D.C. And at that time, there was no NFL football team in Baltimore either. So what would a deep postseason run do for the Orioles in the city? Would that now bring them back in the discussion with the Ravens, who are like kings of Baltimore right now? What would that do for the fan base?
So admittedly, I don't live there. I feel like I'm in tune enough with the fan base to know, like, I'm also a Ravens fan too, but it's just when the Orioles are good, it's just different. I don't know if that's partly because they've been bad, for the most of recent history, and the Ravens have been consistently good, but it's just a different vibe. Like, and even in the game, the fan base, there's just more of it's just like a visceral, just such energy in the stadium. So a consistent run of success like that would be huge. I think the main thing it would do is just expose how great of a baseball town Baltimore is, because people just aren't used to the concept of the Orioles being good, beyond what they read about, in the 60s through the 80s. But yeah, it would totally galvanize the city, and especially, at a time where like certain places in Inner Harbor are looking for reinvestment, like the Harbor Place, that having, the Orioles, who are drawing, increased attendances, who are consistently good, could be a huge boon economically as well, I would imagine. So, nothing but good things. And it's so good to see that energy back in Camden Yards again.
No, it definitely is. I mean, it's like how when Adam Jones was there and with that team, you saw how electric it was. Even that ALCS, how electric that series was with the Royals, even though they lost the series. But it was electric, though. It was real electric. So
yeah.
I feel like to raise, I think that, it's to be hard to compete. Like, now the Ravens are consistent. Football is like king in all sports in terms of what it grosses. But I do feel like, and I'm not showing it because I'm a fan of the Orioles, but I do think, like Josh said, it is a different type of energy when the Orioles win. Like, it's just different. I don't know how to explain, compare it to a Ravens vibe when the Ravens are doing well, but when the Orioles win, it's a different vibe. It is. It's a different energy because they haven't won in so long. That could be an element in play too. But when they win, it's like this. The effect, Camden is crazy. And you're seeing it, and it's the funny thing about it is now, but you've never seen it before. Just like we talk about, if we talked about football, how teams are now invading FedEx or whatever. They invade FedEx. The Orioles are invading everywhere now. Like, I don't know if you watch games, they're in Anaheim. They're in LA for the Angels game. They were in Houston. They were in Cleveland. You can hear them everywhere. Cause they do the Baltimore chant. So you can hear it. So the thing about when the Orioles win, the fan base goes kind of, they do go crazy. They go crazy.
Yep. And it's like, I remember the first time I noticed it, because like you said, it used to be like, I went to a always Red Sox game in 2005. And it was like 75% Red Sox fans. Good experience being at the ballpark, but it was like, man, I wish this was different. And then I remember the first time I noticed it changed was that Cal Ripken statue game against the Yankees in 2012. And it was just like, just a visceral, just like Yankees suck. Like it was just, the crowd was unhinged. It was, and I remember just being blown away. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for. Like, this is what I've been told about. So to see it come to life, and then, you know, after another pretty down stretch for the Orioles, to see it come back is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just happy. I'm happy that there's an opportunity. They have a chance to go. I mean, they're one of the favorites to get to the World Series. So yep. It's good times for the if you're a Baltimore Orioles fan, it's a good time. So, hey, Josh, this has been dope. Before we let you go, how can folks subscribe to the podcast? And also, how can they follow you on social media?
Absolutely. So you can follow me on Twitter at these two handles below, at JJLynnJJ. That's my individual account. And then the_OC_podcast. That is the site page. And I usually go live with my episodes. So you can find my episodes there. You can find them on YouTube or any major podcast service. On Spotify, I'll be labeled under the Pesky Podcast, but you can search the individual episodes too and find it there. And like I said, going to be dropping a new episode next week to get the pod started up again. So keep your eyes out for that.
Are you on X? I guess X Live too as well. X Live.
Facebook, I usually
Facebook
do
Live too.
Facebook Live, I do not. I okay, go live X-Live on. I go live on Twitter, X, and YouTube.
Okay, great. Hey, Josh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. We really do.
Go O's. Yeah, thank you. Yes, go O's. Thank you for having me.
We'll probably have you if they go deep in the postseason. I'll have you on again.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be down in Baltimore for a bunch of the games too. So yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Awesome. All right, Josh. Thanks again, man.
Awesome. Take it easy, guys. Have a good night.
Take it easy. Yeah, let's go O's. I saw Will's text. You know, Will, you saw Will's text, right?
Well, I don't know what he's speaking of. I mean, he went to school in BMO, so he should know the O's are a big deal when they win it, bro. I know
they are, man. We'll
they may not be able to rival the Ravens because the Ravens have been so consistent.
I know.
But it's a different vibe. Y'all hit it on the head, bro.
It's a different vibe. Hey, the O's fought all year to hopefully win the AL East. Speaking of a fight, we have a big one Saturday. Let me introduce our next guest. Right now we have Bite Down Boxing's Reginald Woodson on the pod. What? Let me let him in. What is good, Reg? I'm gonna call you Wood, man. I'm gonna call you Wood. That's your nigga.
What's up? Where you been at?
Where you been at, bro?
Hey, thank y'all for bringing me back.
Hey, all we know you. Hey, Wood, man. You know we fans of you, bro. You know that, man.
I appreciate it, man. I just got lost, man. I just sat down in front of my equipment one day and just was lost.
Yeah, you lost, like though. Floyd, bro. You retire one minute.
I know, bro. Like, I know.
Then
man.
You back. Then you like, I'm a considerate. You know what I'm saying? I tell you, man, you're a memorable dude, though. Every time my wife watches the show, I'm like, man, Wood been telling me that show is trash. You know, 5 seasons ago, man. So, bro, keep going, man. Keep using your voice, bro.
I tell you this, man. I'm on an app called Wisdom, man, and I'm over there. I cook over there every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same exposure and all of that. They don't have a huge user base or whatever, but all I got to do is hit go live, put my title in there and two tags, and I cook over there. Don't nobody know what the hell I'm talking about because this is all... It's all religion and atheists and astrologists and numerology and shit. I'm sorry.
You good.
It's wild over there. And then it's me talking about the other black girl and other the stuff I'm talking about and boxing.
And
music too. I'm the resident. I'm the resident boxing aficionado over there on the Wisdom app.
that could be dope. You can make some snacks or you can make a meal for the fight, right?
Thank you.
There you go. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it, bro.
It's all about keeping your options open, man.
Hey, you got TikTok,
man? I signed up because I was gonna cook on TikTok, and I got signed up and was getting ready to start cooking over there because this brother from Wisdom wanted me to start doing TikTok. Okay. I opened up my app like 3 days later, man, and TikTok banned me, and I had never made my first video.
They banned you. What you do?
I'm like, bro, I'm old, man. I'm like, I'm too old for this stuff, man. How you get fired on your day off?
Hey, Wood, man, you got to come on the show on a regular basis, man.
For real, no real, real talk.
I'm excited to get your thoughts. I saw your thoughts at the end of that that Errol and Crawford fight. We don't want to go back there because Errol's stablemate, of course, is fighting Saturday night. Canelo Alvarez will put his four super middleweight championships on the line against junior middleweight champion Jermell Charlo. What will you be looking for from both guys in this fight, brother?
You know, the theme with the Derrick James stable is my timing was off. Frank Martin said at his last fight where he barely got by. I don't even know how to pronounce my man's name. Little known fighter that they had Frank Martin in there against. He said his timing was off that night. Errol Spence Jr., amongst several things that went awry for him, he said his timing was off. So I'm sitting here now looking at Jermell Charlo coming back after like a 14-15 month layoff. How is his timing going to be great against one of the fighters with the best timing, some of the best timing in the game?
So
that's what I'm looking forward to him. And the fact that I've seen him be outboxed by Tony Harrison, who isn't a bad fighter. And a pretty damn good boxer. He just has problems finishing fights. But he had Charlo pretty much solved in their rematch until Charlo just like fully went for it and turned it into a fight or a brawl. Mm-hmm. And he got him out of there. So that's what I'm looking for him. And then on Canelo's side, I think he's going to be motivated because he's probably tired of hearing he's slipping. And he knows he still has these two. He has two more fights on this deal with the PBC. So he needs a performance to get people excited about those other two fights. And you can't sit here and lose to a guy coming up 14 pounds, you know, from junior middleweight. So I'm expecting him to. I don't really see him putting on a show per se, but. I think he kind of like needs to like redefine who he is becoming an older fighter and still trying to hold on to the status of the face of boxing. I think he needs an exceptional performance.
So do you think he needs the early knockout?
I'm not so sure he can knock. I'm not so sure he's a knockout. I never really liked his power as super middleweight. He did get Caleb Plant up out of there later in that fight. Mm-hmm. You know, wasn't able to do a whole lot against Bevo up at light heavyweight. I'm really not enamored with his power at super middleweight.
Okay. So in terms, do you think that Charlo has a legit? Do you feel like Charlo has a legit Jermell? Let me go. You call him Jermell. Do you feel like Jermell has a legit chance to upset Canelo?
I thought about this all day, man, and I try not to be a hater. I try my best not to be or to be perceived as a hater.
Okay, about to say, what you say, not to be a hater, like to receive. Okay, I got you. Not with you.
I disagree with so much stuff that's going on in sports right now, and I'm often just, I guess, if the shoe fits. I'm a purist, man. There's weight divisions for a reason. And we just happen to be in this very weird era of boxing where, I mean, we got the heavyweight champion of the world, maybe the lineal heavyweight champion in Tyson Fury. He don't even want to fight this other man. This small heavyweight who he makes fun of, but he don't even want to fight the man and become the undisputed champion. I don't think we've had one in the four belt era at heavyweight. In a moment where we're doing all of these, we actually have two undisputed champions right here Saturday getting it on. Yep. You don't want to fight him. It took us 5 years to get EJ and Bud. It was another weird situation. So I'm just not a fan of this fight. I can't get in the time off. I just don't know how, you know what, as a boxing guy, and you guys talk boxing enough, mm-hmm. you want to be right with your picks. But just like your football talk, your baseball analysis, all that stuff is excellent. You have so much, your basketball talk, it's apples to apples. It's oranges to oranges quite often. This boxing stuff right now, man, I mean, we don't know how to, it's hard to put your name on anything right now. So, I can't see him having a legitimate chance at a knockout. Now, it's boxing and anything can happen. Mm-hmm. But he just hasn't shown me enough. I mean, you had to have the rematch with Castaño after that split draw. Then you come back, you do knock him out, but it was late. Again, he was completely out of answers against Tony Harrison, if you're being unbiased in that fight. He did get the knockout, though. But I just haven't seen anything to believe. And Canelo has a hell of a chin. I don't see him getting a decision. So I really struggle to find any kind of formula for Jermell to get his hand raised.
That's a good point, because people don't talk about it. Canelo has an amazing chin.
Probably the one thing about him that I can't say nothing about. And I can't question it in any way. The other thing that I'm looking at is how much better, or how do you size up Danny Jacobs and Jermell Charlo? Jacobs really didn't push Canelo. And I could say some different things about Jacobs coming up small in different moments in different parts of his career. I can't explain it, but that wasn't his best showing competitively speaking. That's really all I kind of have to see how Charlo translates to super middleweight. No fight at middleweight. You know, the man is coming off of a 14-15 month break hiatus, and then you in here with 14 more pounds of body weight trying to perform under the lights against a very formidable boxer. I can't find a formula for him. I just can't. Sorry, brothers.
Ray, you had something you want to say.
I do want to jump in. So, Wood, who is the common opponent for Jermell and for Canelo? Austin Trout.
Trout.
Gotcha. Austin Trout, when he fought Canelo, it was a very competitive fight, and Jermell beat Austin Trout, I want to say, a little more decisively than Canelo did. Does that factor into your thinking at all, to say Jermell could potentially outbox him? And Jermell, I don't see him knocking out Canelo either, because of what you said. I think that's true. But Jermell got some power, and with him having a little more weight on it, I think people sleeping on him. And yeah, I want to get your prediction too.
I mean, I got Canelo with the decision.
Okay.
I think another thing along with that chin, I think the one thing with the exception of the Bivol fight, Canelo's, which he took Bivol lightly. You know, he was golfing. He was golfing in training camp and went vegan or whatever, pescatarian, whatever he did going into the fight. just completely disrespected that man. So I'm saying all that to say, I still think that's been Bebo has been the only one that's really made Canelo fight differently than what he wanted to fight. And I don't see, based on Harrison's success with boxing, with because he was beating Jermell from the outside, inside fighting, mid-range. There wasn't any real estate where Charlo was dominating him until he landed that shot that got him, you know, shaky and whatnot. I just don't see him being able to outbox Canelo, who has great timing. And also, again, he can't. I don't see him speeding. I don't see him speeding Canelo up at all. And that's the one thing, you know, this, Ray. You know, Canelo's here and there, he's shown some excellent defense.
Yeah.
And it's not the stuff that a lot of the black fighters do, the brothers do. It's a variation of that. But he, like I said, he knows how to manage his space. The head movement is there. You know, a lot of people attribute his slickness that he does display to the lesson that he took from Floyd. I just think I think the total package is gonna be a little bit too much for Jermell.
What does Jermell do if he does lose? What does Jermell do after? What do you think he does after Canelo?
Hey, bud, I know I said some things, man, but we need to figure it out. So he's going to get stripped of the one title as soon as he walks up the three stairs, I believe. I don't think he really steps back too much so long as he doesn't get embarrassed. It's kind of like when Kell Brook went up. He got his face cracked up and all of that. I don't see that happening to Jermell here. That's why this fight being signed and it not being able to be Big Charlo or Jamal because of everything that's going on in his life. That's why the timing of this is just so frustrating, because it really would have been greater for boxing if we would have been able to get Charlo against Terrence Crawford after that performance. So it's boxing, and it's very hard to, you know, make step two and three, because usually things get all tripped up on step one. So I think maybe he fights Tim Zhu. Maybe they go forward with that. And that's not a bad you know, if it is a bad defeat, as far as him losing, you know, 9-3, 8-4, somewhere in there, you know, you go back and you fight Zhu.
What's next for Canelo then? You think, is he going to finally fight my guy?
You know, Benavidez?
Yeah, you know it. The boogeyman, that's what I'm
thinking call about this earlier today too, man. And then that's the other weird thing. We actually had a moment in time where two Mexicans won't fight each other. Well, the one Mexican won't
one fight don't want to fight. One don't want to fight.
That was the other weird thing that I was thinking about earlier, you know, trying to get my thoughts together. I think they might try to figure out how to make him and Bud, man.
Canelo Bud? I mean, the talk is there. It's a lot of talk. I don't think they're serious, but the talk is there, though. I won't hold you.
I think if somehow they can get a catch weight that Canelo is comfortable, you know, he feels like I don't have to do nothing.
Yeah, because Canelo's the one. He has to cater to Canelo. That's different.
Canelo was like, I don't have, but what's, you know, what the numbers look like, you know, what's the bag looking like?
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe that it's going to be an easier night at the office because this dude is way too small, maybe he makes a concession. Because if they keep putting Benavidez in front of him, he's going to keep shoving that name away. So it's like, I don't see him fighting the young boy, David Morrell. He's not going to fight Morrell.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and you're over here on this side of the street now, so there's no chance in going and running it back with Bevo. Jamal is, we don't even know if he's officially a boxer anymore. So his brother got family, his wife getting beat up, he's getting slapped. It's too much stuff going on. So I think he might entertain it.
So here's what I'm gonna say, bro. If Jermell loses, I go and fight Plant. You both lost to Canelo. Like you just said, the slap took place. There's a lot of storylines. It would be a fight that would garner interest.
True.
Very true. For David Benavidez and Demetrius Andre getting ready to come together and fight, I think Canelo gets the winner of that because, like you said, he's with PBC. He can't get out of it at this point. Eventually, it's going to happen. And we all believe Benavidez is going to come out of that fight victorious. So that makes sense. And for Crawford, it's going to be Spence Crawford too. As much as people don't want to see it, it's happening because the clause is there. As the same way that Deontay Wilder, he exercised his right to fight Fury again. So it's going to happen. So those are the three fights right there. Tim Tszyu, simply because Jermell is vacating that belt, like you said, him and Tim Tszyu, it won't work out at this point.
I can see that, Ray. And Charlo against Plant, like you said, you can.
Storyline.
He put hands on your brother and whatnot.
Yeah. that just sounds funny.
I mean, for pulling another man's beard, that whole thing. He's just in a weird era of boxing, man. And his cameras all over the place. Like, I don't want to see some of this stuff. I don't want to see some of these guys down bad like that.
I ain't gonna lie, I don't either, man. I don't want to see Lubin and no, I'm sorry. Who does Berrios fight this weekend?
Oh, you guys.
He fight Ugas. Yeah, I don't want to see that fight either, to be honest. But it might be an entertaining fight, but Berrios to me is becoming like a gatekeeper. It's a lot of fights. Boxing needs to somehow find a universal system, man, and bring everybody together. Mm-hmm. Stop all this politics. And let's get some good fights going, man. It's too many good fighters. Gosh, you got MMA guys coming in the mix. It's just
that's just bothering me, man. Like he took the Fury point, man. Like, come on, man. Like, come on, man. You got one right here.
Before you say something else, I'm sorry because you know, of course, you critique all the television. You watch your Netflix. Netflix got Jake Paul looking like the savior of boxing out here. I'm like, wow, really? Like, Mike Tyson, like, as long as people watching, I'm excited. Like, bro, like, seriously? Like, bro, boxing still got some ways to go, even though the interest is there, man. They got stars. Big fights have happened. We talking about Tank Garcia, Bud, and Arrow. It's been some big fights. Benavidez and Plant. It's been some
Plant, great yeah, fights. Some big, yeah, some real big fights.
Just boxing got to seize it, man.
That's actually the point that I kind of was holding in my bag, man. Like when we looked at 2020, this is a great year for boxing.
Boxing, yeah.
And it's a lot. We got some good stuff coming up. They just announced Devin and Prograis.
Yeah,
Regis. Yeah.
You know, we can do whatever with that December 9th. Yeah. But tell me what the best storyline is going into 2024. What's the one fight that you want to see next year? Like what's going to be that main fight that the majority of people are looking forward to for 2024?
I want to see Usyk versus Fury. I mean, that's the one I want to see.
I think you got Tank Shakur, you got Usyk.
You got Deontay, Joshua still would be a draw. Would be a big draw actually.
I'm saying, well, let me rephrase that. What is something that's in the pipeline that actually has positive momentum?
Gotcha.
And being finalized, being done. We kind of don't have nothing.
Yeah. Other than like maybe you said 2024. Other than like, I mean, it's part two, Earl and Bud.
Right. That's it. That,
yeah.
Dealing with that really quickly, though, I'm actually, I had a, really not a, I didn't get to fact check this brother, but he tried to stop me at work the other day and tried to tell me something was going on with the negotiations. Anything on Alabama, his word is good. Alabama football, because he's from down south, his word is money. But when the brother come at me with boxing, I'm like, man. But he was throwing it out there that maybe there's gonna be some back channel talks as a way to make it like the negotiations broke down on what Bud is willing to do to make the fight. Mm. And maybe it might be some stuff worked to give Errol Spence a way out of that fight. Like, cause you know, publicly you got to do the rematch and you got to run that back. But you don't really want that fight, do you? I mean, it's going to be hard to sell to a lot of people. And maybe there's something better that we could do for you and maybe that we should do for you. So I don't trust my man on what he's telling me. I got to go back. I'm like, where did you see this, bro? 24.
Yeah, I don't think he's right. I think he made that up. And I mean, and I don't want to see the fight. And I'm an Earl dude. And like right now, I don't want to see it. I've seen enough the first time. But knowing who Earl is, in terms of you hear him talk on it, you hear Earl in interviews or whatever. And what in terms of his action, I don't see him backing down from a rematch. Like I don't see that in his bag. Maybe his team may try it, but not Earl.
It's not fair, bro. Yeah. But he had one bad night, but it's okay.
The only thing is this though, Ray. This past weekend, we just saw another rematch that shouldn't have happened with Joe Joyce and Zhele Zhang.
Yeah,
and it was a shame that Joe Joyce had to go through that, but he went through it and he was out of there in three rounds. And it could be a similar situation with Errol. I don't know if they do it at 154 or whatever, but
now I heard about 140. Now I heard it'd be at 147. I heard it still be at 147.
That's what I heard.
That it would be 147.
That's gonna be a tough sell for me.
Yeah, I heard it'd be 147. That's what I heard. That's the source. I heard, like I was looking at stuff. I heard that 147 would happen at 147.
That's what I try to tell these boys, man. When brothers get on some of the other, you know, my peers and the online guys, the internet guys that talk boxing, I'm just like, some of this stuff y'all talk about is entertaining, man. But this is such a man's game, you know. You can get pulled out of the, like they were saying that Russ should have been pulled, so like he shouldn't have had to go out there and finish that game against Miami. There ain't no getting pulled in boxing. Like you gotta go in here and face a dude who pieced you up, and it's a man's sport.
There's no escaping that, bro. Hey, man, this is good. We gotta have you on again, bro.
I appreciate y'all for blowing the dust off of me, man. I'm out here like Eddie Kane. Man, let me. it was so convenient, man, over on Wisdom.
Yeah.
And I just been living over there, man. But like okay. I got an audience over there, though. Like,
I got you. You got your own. Hey, look, man,
you got a wild brother, man. I ain't never even heard of Wisdom before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He catch me off guard with his Wisdom thing. I was like, what is Wisdom?
Hey, bro, they said, hey.
Nah, oh, man, got bro. A whole cult. He got a whole right cult now. Over there, bro. He had a whole hey, cult in Wisdom, bro. He has a whole cult.
Hey, man,
it's crazy.
I toil.
He didn't say Patreon. He said Wisdom.
Yeah. Bro, I toiled in this boxing game for 5, 6, 7 years on YouTube and all that stuff, man. And it hurt my feelings, man, to see some of the dudes with bad information, can't pronounce nobody's name, don't know the weight classes, don't know the belts, don't even know when the fight is scheduled, just be yapping and got 60, 70,000 fans. So I'm like, man, I got miles on the road and I'm in the press conference, I'm here, I'm there, and I ain't got 10 followers.
So go ahead.
I just, man, it was like, Wisdom sent me an email, right?
Yo, is that
I was looking for, some love, man, and Wisdom sent me an email and was like, we want you. I said, you know, I'm there, and I've been there ever since.
Hey, yo, how long you been on this Wisdom thing, man? How long?
Hey, when we get off of here, y'all, before y'all shut down tonight, y'all gonna look on y'all's phone like,
I ain't gonna hold you. I'm like, what is this Wisdom thing? I'm about to go...
It is on here. Yeah, man. It's I've been on there like a year and a half.
Okay.
Like I said, I cook every day. I do afternoon. I do afternoon wood. I do fights on like Saturday nights. I talk some commanders on Sunday. I do my TV episode recaps. I talk albums. The whole thing, man. I'm killing it over there. Hey, it's the
amazing.
the founder and creator of Wisdom. Yeah. Her name is like she Nigerian. I think she's Nigerian.
Oh damn, she's taking out socials.
Her name is Dio. I can't think
Dio.
Of her.
She's Nigerian. Dio. She definitely, yeah, Dio.
I can't think of her last name, but her first name is Dio.
Yeah,
I done rapped with her a couple of times. She's been on as my guest. Hey, Ray.
This dude, he a king out this chart.
they gave me a gold badge, man. Like, everybody don't get a gold badge.
Well, man, verified, man. He verified on Wisdom.
Hey, you got to get a check mark somewhere.
I'm not knocking it, brother. I'm just trying to become informed about it. But it speaks to your versatility. Now you added cooking to the repertoire. You can talk cycling. That's something not everybody can do, brother. So you've been encouraging to everybody else that's out there on their grind trying to reach a goal, bro. Just keep doing what you do, whether it's Wisdom, whether it's Patreon, or YouTube. It don't matter, bro. We here, man. It's been dope having you on tonight, bro.
I do want to add this, though, too. Like, in terms of, like, I know we all joking or whatever, but don't be annoyed with other folks who are trying to, they're doing other things that you feel like you're more educated in terms of like the boxing thing. Don't get like pissed off of that because your time gonna come. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been that way too, bro. Like, I ain't gonna hold you. And I'll be like, dude, like, you talking about this, you got way more whatever than me. And I'm like, I know way more than you. So, don't let that annoy you, bro. Like, real
no, time. No, y'all. Thanks for the encouragement, and I take that to heart. But
because you're good at what you do, that's what I'm saying. I'm just being real. Like, you really are good at what you do,
and that's what I'm saying. I want to before I do go. I do want to tell y'all, man. I tell a couple people when I'm just talking, but I'm like, man, these brothers, y'all consistent, and a lot of people can't be consistent, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just salute y'all for that, man. I told them on Wisdom. I was like, hey, tomorrow at 9:05 Eastern time, because I'm like, I know y'all don't think I do all the stuff that I do and I've done all the stuff that I've done. But I'm like, I'm going to be on here cooking with these brothers. And I was like, man, these brothers, I came in the game after them. My man Wale emailed me and helped me get going. And then they still cooking today. So I'm like, these brothers have been doing their thing. And like you said, man, it's not all about, it's really not all about clicks, views,
right.
Plays, subscribers and all of that stuff, man. It's about doing good work. And, you know, y'all do y'all's thing and I appreciate that. My disadvantage, man, is just I'm a one-man guy. And I just, man, every 3 or 4 months, man, I just get really burnt out.
Yeah, and, I get that. I understand.
No, I get that. Like I said, when I could just get on Wisdom, they ought to give me some money for...
Hell yeah, they should. What are you talking about? I'm telling you, they should.
But
now our listeners know about Wisdom.
I know, for real.
I'll tell you this though, man. They're kind of like their strategy, man, is to keep it like they don't really want
a bunch of folks.
They call them like whales. They don't really want big name people and the different celebrities and the former rappers. Like, they want it to be everyday people over there talking. So like I said, I'm hiding them Wisdom streets, man.
All right, man. I'm gonna go search it. I'm gonna go search it, bro. You got me about to check some Wisdom out. I'm about to get wise to Wisdom.
I'm gonna check y'all out Saturday after the fight, man, and see what the follow up or next week what the follow up commentary is, man. I'm hoping it's a good event, man, and that Charlo has a good showing. I got to salute him for stepping up to the challenge. You know, again, it was supposed to be Jamal. Mm. He jumped at this, and I hated that, and I was rocking with Bud, but I really hated it that here Errol Spence was, and being loyal to his company and his leader, his business people and his team and everything, but they sent him in there against an opponent like Bud with that type of inactivity, man, and that a lot of these guys, man, this inactivity is like. It's It's not fair to these guys, man. It's not fair to these guys.
No, I totally agree. Hey, well, Reg, man, thanks for being on, man. Before, and truth be told, man, we can probably have you on next week to talk boxing if you want to, bro. If you're available, you know, or if you'd watch the fight, because sometimes you'll be watching fights. You'd be like, I ain't watching the fight. How much it costs? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm probably not gonna watch this one. I'm gonna let y'all talk about it next week.
All right, you got it, dude. All right, man. Thanks for being on, bro.
Last thing.
Go ahead.
I want to be politically correct when I say this.
This is why.
The people that I ended up watching Errol and Bud with.
Yeah.
It was about 8 country club looking individuals and me. And I just was there looking around the room like, what's happened to my social? But I appreciate my man that sent me the invite. I had no problem paying for the eight, you know, paying for out of my own pocket, man. But I buy so much expensive ass cycling stuff, man, that I was like, when he sent me the invite, I was like, I'll be there. But when I got there though, that's a different crowd for me. And I'm not a street brother. I'm not from the street or nothing like that. But you know, I'm used to a certain kind of company. Nice guys. But I'm just like, damn, my social circle has really changed. Hey, man, I ain't gonna hold y'all up, man. I appreciate you, man.
We do. We definitely appreciate you. You want to plug any social media? Whatever. I know you don't do social media like that. You'd be anti-social, other than Wisdom.
Plug Wisdom, bro.
Yeah, plug Wisdom. Yeah, for real.
I think on there, I'm just at Reggie. It might be like, I don't even know how they do the names on there, man. I just get on there and talk, man. I tell people. If you go on the Wisdom app, man, and you find, you can search for Reggie Woodson. And about damn near every work day at noon, I'm on there with some topic. I've been cooking on Prime and Dan Lanning and the Commanders a little bit.
Okay.
I do it all. Like you said, Ray, I'm talking about cycling. I'm talking about the Tour de France. I just do everything, man.
I'm talking. You gonna write something up about the fight though?
I really would like to get back to writing, man.
Didn't you write about Bud and
Yeah, I did do something after that. I would like to get back to it, man. It's lonely out here, man. It's lonely out here.
I got you. Hey, man. We gonna get you back on. All right, we definitely are though.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for answering, man. You take it easy, bro.
Take care.
All right, take care. He's awesome, man. He is awesome. Yeah, man, that was dope, man. He wow.
Yeah, definitely. Had me rolling, bro.
Yeah, had me rolling. Yeah, I was the guy that. I haven't laughed this much in a long time, bro. That man, crazy.
It's more work to be done, though. Good stuff tonight, brother.
Definitely, man. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify. Excuse me, Apple Podcasts. Tune in, iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on X at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene. I like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. If you're watching this, on YouTube, click the red subscribe button and like this video. Even my busted thumb, like this video. All right. Also, check out the home of The Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at empiremedia.com. And also, this show can be found on the Podcast DC app. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows, as well as other great content. All right, man. This has been a great show, Ray. Like you said, man, we had a good time. Great guests. Man, we're going to keep trying to knock these things out. Like Wiz said, stay consistent. So we're going to try to stay consistent. Anyway, folks. Yeah, you know it. Anyway, folks, you've been listening to The Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.